T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories. Special Edition is a production of Entercom Communications.
Welcome to Special Edition. I'm Paula Degnan. Congressman Dan Muser was diagnosed with COVID-19. Intercom's Jason Barsky checked in with him to find out how he's doing. We're also going to be hearing from Nancy Kamen. She caught up with Dr. David Palmiter to talk about anxiety and stress during these times, and very important now that kids are going back to school. But we're going to start off with Auditor General Eugene DePasquale. Once again this week, he zeroes on something that is important to everyone: jobs.
I wanted to have a discussion with Jess McCray. He's with the Workforce Investment Board of South Central Pennsylvania. And not that our region is necessarily the exact same as every region across Pennsylvania. We know that there are some differences in every region, but a lot of similar trends will exist. So we wanted to, first of all, thank Jesse for taking the time. And Jesse, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself and how you got this position with the Workforce Investment Board? And for a lot of people out there, maybe just tell them what the Workforce Investment Board is too.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to this discussion. And when I bring up workforce development boards or workforce investment boards, it's not altogether common that people know exactly what that is. Really, South Central PA Works exists as a convener, both of job seekers and businesses, to invest in, evaluate, and really advance high-impact workforce development programs for our 8-county region. So we serve Perry, Juniata, Cumberland, Dauphin, Lebanon, and then Adams, Franklin, and York, those 8 counties. And we oversee and manage the PA CareerLink job centers, of which we have 6 of them throughout the region. And those job centers exist to help people get retrained and re-educated for the jobs that are both for today and for tomorrow. And as I alluded to before, we really have two sides of it, the business side and the job seekers, acting as a convener between the two. So as an organization, we really fancy ourselves as a public-private partnership. We're funded in large part through federal and state funds, but we really need employer champions and really that demand-driven side of business leadership to tell us, what should we be investing in? What are the right skills and what are the occupations that are most in demand? When we take a forward-looking view, where do we see our region in 5 to 10 years? And how can we be sort of a thought leader around the right kind of investments for the right career pathways for our citizens?
Jesse, if I could just stop for just a second. Look, people watching this right now, they may be in Allentown, they may be in Erie. That is a similar process in every region of the state. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. There are 22 workforce development boards throughout the Commonwealth, of which we are just one. So no matter where you are in Pennsylvania, there is a workforce development board in your region. And ultimately, there is a PA CareerLink or multiple PA CareerLink sites for them to be able to access that. So that's a common-wide investment that we have.
Two things I'd like to start with here. Certainly, thank you for that description. Let's take it from two different angles. I'm looking for a job. I'm John or Julie Q. Public, and I walk in. Like, how does that happen? Like, whether I'm approaching the website or I'm walking into one of the centers. And then the other part I'd like you to talk about is, I'm an employer looking to hire, and I need X skills. How do those two go about that, where you help both of them specifically meet their needs?
Yeah, so it's a great question. So this really is the bread and butter of our work. We view ourselves almost as a fulcrum between the two sides of the scale in the labor market, as you alluded to, the job seekers or the supply side, and the businesses, the demand side. That is to say, businesses need workers to keep their operations running, and job seekers are looking for not just the job for today, but also potentially for the job for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So, as you alluded to, in what I'll say more normal times, we have these job centers in which people can walk right in, and they'll get seen by a career advisor or a case manager, someone to ascertain what is it that we can help you with. Are you unemployed? Are you currently employed but looking for sort of a better paying job or a next step up the career pathway ladder? And really, that's where the intensive career services come in, whether it's resume help, interviewing skills, job search help. Or ultimately, where we see our biggest impact is helping to give them scholarships or grants to be able to go back to school or to get the training they need to get that job. And by the way, that's not just higher education. That can be apprenticeships, that can be industry recognized credentials, that can be any number of short-term credentials to help them get
that job. And by the way, I know that this is higher ed, but that also could be community colleges as well. It's not just a four-year school, correct?
Absolutely. In fact, we work locally with Harrisburg Area Community College. We have a tremendous partnership with them. And as you alluded to, I mean, it's higher education in a little bit more of an accessible form, some cases even more affordable. So we do a lot of work with HAC and other four-year schools in our region. So that's more of the job seeker side. What I'll note there that I think is really important is we're not really currently living in normal times. So our PA CareerLink physical offices are currently closed to the public. However, that's where pacareerlink.pa.gov is the primary site where job seekers can get information. You can search through tens of thousands of jobs that are currently posted on that website, and the biggest thing for us is virtual and remote services that we're able to provide to job seekers. You call a number, you log onto the website, and you can Skype or FaceTime or Zoom with a career advisor or a case manager to be able to help them. On the businesses side, for us, all the work that we do means nothing if it's not leading to a job. So if we are not engaging with businesses, it's, as I like to refer to it, workforce development as the train and pray method, right? You train people and pray that there's a job out there for them. And that's a really backwards way to do it.
Right.
So we really lead with businesses. We convene industry groups where we get a dozen or so companies from the same sector or industry. And we ask them, we're here to learn from you. What are you looking for? What skill sets are most in demand? What occupations can you not fill? And how can we help? So really, it's sort of a short description of the whole sector work, which has to then lead to what training programs do we invest in for the job seekers?
So for discussion purposes, again, I want to go pre-COVID here, because I do think you tell me if I'm wrong, we're probably in an odd place from just a job placement side of it, of what skills are needed right now. But pre-COVID, and hopefully we're going to be back there early, sooner rather than later, but we know it's going to still be a couple more months. It seems to be the biggest growth areas, even in our region, because we certainly know some of the Pittsburgh Renaissance was from the Eds and Meds. We certainly saw that down in the Philadelphia region. Lehigh Valley certainly experiencing that. In South Central Pennsylvania, is that starting to take hold too? We know the Hershey Medical Center and what we're seeing with UPMC, certainly UPMC Pinnacle. There is a growth in the healthcare sector. Is that leading to more jobs in those fields? And certainly, what are we seeing from the education side of it as well?
Yeah, Eds and Meds is a great description for what's happened in Pittsburgh and what's happened in Philly. And I would say to some degree, it's definitely been a driver in South Central PA, primarily the meds part of that. Healthcare has been the leading sector over the last 5 or 6 years since I've been at this job in terms of not only employment growth, in terms of actual number of jobs created, but also in the percentage growth too. As we look 5-10 years down the road, those projections aren't slowing down anytime soon. So certainly healthcare has been the primary driver. But one thing that I would say is somewhat unique to South Central PA that has been a driver of growth, that's not to say it's not happening in Pittsburgh or Philly, but what's in our DNA here in South Central PA is manufacturing, making stuff. We're builders.
Right.
And I think that has always been a core part of our economic strength. And pre-COVID, that was absolutely a key driver as well. So advanced manufacturing and healthcare were really the two that we saw the most growth in. What's, I think, interesting about advanced manufacturing, and you're fully aware of this, and I'm sure you've heard this or discussed it or sort of promoted it, is the jobs of old manufacturing are not the jobs from today. Right. I've heard it described as dirty, dark, and dangerous, all the way to, it's really high tech, cutting edge. You don't necessarily need a 4-year degree for all of those jobs. If you want,
I know a lot of tours aren't happening right now, but you go to the Harley Davidson plant in York, you could literally eat a sandwich off that floor.
Yep. It's so clean, right? I mean, you go to some of these places, Weldon Solutions in York, where they're building, robotic arms for advanced manufacturing. And like you said, it's you could eat off the floor. So then it's a matter of, we see a aging population as typical in the workforce in advanced manufacturing. And it's really incumbent upon us to figure out, how do we train and develop a new cohort that will sustain what I think is one of the most important parts of the South Central PA economy. And sort of, not to jump ahead, but I do think that with all of this disruption and upheaval in the economy, the one thing that we still have is that South Central Pennsylvania is still a great region to have a business and to be able to live, work, and play. I mean, the one thing that hasn't changed about COVID-19 is our location. And we're still strategically located in a great place. And I think long-term, you're going to see South Central PA be just fine in terms of our regional economy. I really do.
I think one thing people have woken up across the region, I'm talking about the entire Northeast, is that still how affordable it is to live here. I mean, again, this is anecdotal, so please don't, I'm sure we're going to get the stats on this. But New York and Baltimore, if you're working in those regions, Pennsylvania all of a sudden has become pretty attractive. We all know the Lehigh Valley and the sort of the Poconos have become almost a hub for daily commutes into New York for work. And I know, to me, that type of commute was always a little crazy, but hey, people choose that. But I do know that we're getting anecdotal that that's picked up more steam during COVID. Because I know some people in the real estate business, various parts of Pennsylvania are on fire. And I mean that in a good way, on fire. That is, other than certain parts of the Philadelphia region, affordability is a very big part of Pennsylvania. Even, Pittsburgh certainly having a rise in housing costs over the last decade, but compared to other major cities, nothing close to that. I think certainly that plays into, there's still, again, a lot of good jobs in this area, certainly from the manufacturing and the healthcare side, while having a relatively affordable region is something that is an absolute strength for us.
It absolutely is. I mean, you think about the proximity to Philly, to the Baltimore and DC metro regions, as you alluded to in the Poconos area and sort of the Northeast part of the state, the corridor from Jersey and New York City. I know we always talk about the proximity as one of the key factors or characteristics of our region. What I would love to see, and this is a little bit forward looking and a little bit ideal, is, or 10, 15 years down the road, I would love South Central PA to have a more well-formed identity.
Right.
In a similar way that both Pittsburgh and Philly, I think, have done a great job with that.
Right.
As opposed to the, hey, we're close by to a lot of these other metro regions, an affordable place to live, but you're spot on. And I think what we're seeing is that it's the resiliency in an economy that is what we're looking for during significant disruptions like this. I mean, the economists that use all of these numbers, they say this is a recession, and it absolutely is, but it really was more of a deep freeze. I mean, it was... Right. Everything just got put in the freezer really quick.
The analysis I heard, it was almost and again, please don't take this as from the medical terminology, but it was a self-induced coma.
It was.
It was basically, we have to do this to make sure more people don't die. Because the economy was, look, we all know income inequality was a huge issue. There's a lot of these other issues that were out there, but generally speaking, we were at practically near full employment. And then all of a sudden this happened, but it was self-induced for all the, I believe, right reasons, but it was self-induced.
You're absolutely right. And so when we see this self-induced sort of deep freeze that we had, we look at, with all of those factors, the resiliency of an economy.
Right.
And by resiliency, we mean, so here are the questions that we're asking ourselves at the Workforce Development Board. What jobs are coming back?
Right.
How many of them are coming back? How many occupations that were pre-COVID have now shifted in pretty substantial and dramatic ways? How many people, to bring up a great point you just alluded to, with inequality and particularly income inequality and socioeconomic mobility, those that have been displaced are, a lot of them are frontline workers, a lot of them are retail or food service, and by and large, those were the ones that were just barely making it by. They were the working poor, the Alice population. So we have to consider, how do we do right by those job seekers who have been displaced permanently? We know that some jobs have already come back, and we know that many will come back at some point, but there is a percentage that won't. The numbers that we're running look like it's probably in that 6 to 8% range that won't come back on a permanent basis. But that's where we need business leadership, and we need workforce development boards to be working with economic development and higher education to say, we can put these folks back to work. We just have to do it the right way. So,
and from that 6 to 8%, and without obviously being down to the minutia on this, what are some of the concerns that people have of the jobs that may not come back? What are some of those fields that, again, it could change. None of us have the crystal ball, but what are the ones that you're most concerned won't come back?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's probably the primary question that we're asking ourselves. From the data that we've been able to pull together and some of the studies that we have been working on, it looks like accommodation, tourism, food service, and some of the retail, also I'd say arts and entertainment, would all be the sectors that have been hit the hardest. And some of it makes sense. I mean, if it's an amusement park, if it's a Harrisburg Senators, when you don't have the demand, when you don't have people visiting, seeing your baseball game or seeing your museum or amusement park, there's going to be a reduction in aggregate demand. And so there's going to be some percentage of jobs that just will have to be cut, whether that's 10%, 20%,
30%. And on that one, you take like the Harrisburg Senators, York Revolution. Look, I am sure the Phillies and Pirates and the Orioles and, you know, the Yankees across the board, Indians, Cleveland Indians, have all had a drop in revenue because there's people aren't in the stands. But they do have television revenue.
Yes.
I'm not saying it makes up for all of it, but they do have television revenue. I'm not saying this as a criticism towards the Harrisburg Senators or the York Revolution or the Reading Phillies, but the reality is minor league baseball without people in the stands is not viable. It just doesn't work. So if they're not able to be up and running with people in the stands next year, all of those associated jobs are in jeopardy around that, forgetting even the players on the field, the people that sell the T-shirts, the hats, all that stuff. So I'd have to assume that's somewhere in the field. But again, this is just me. The concert tours, whether they be the Rolling Stones or, you know, just, you know, a local band, they've got like all those associated jobs that go with that too have got to be in jeopardy because I don't know about you, but there's not a lot of people clamoring to be in a 70,000 seat stadium right now to listen to the Rolling Stones. I know the Stones are obviously on a different level anyway, but even local bands, like where do they get their start? A couple hundred people in some local, you know, dive facility. I don't mean that to knock them, but you know, where's that, you know, comedians, all the stuff that goes along with that. It's a real challenge right now for all those jobs associated with those fields as that art and entertainment.
You're absolutely right. And so as we're looking at that, and again, there's no perfect solution to this. I wish I could just take all the people that were displaced as, you know, working in support roles or retail or food service at Harrisburg Senators. And I'm only using that because we live in Harrisburg and we love going to the Senators games. We're going to miss it this summer. But for all of those people, we want to look at their occupations and say, what skill set can we retrain, upskill, reposition? You know, the customer service aspect of working at a, you know, entertainment or, you know, sort of like a Senators or a Hershey Entertainment type customer service. How can we retrain or reposition those skills to jobs that are available, perhaps in the financial sector or as customer service reps for a larger healthcare company, healthcare billing? What we're trying to do is look at the displacement, recognizing that there are really talented people who otherwise would still be working, and do the best we can to get them to work. What will be interesting about this one is that there are a lot of people who just unfortunately won't have their job when they come back, but they want to work and they're hard workers, just like Pennsylvanians are. That to me is why I see this from a an optimistic standpoint, because I think as a region and as a Commonwealth, we're going to bounce back from this because we've got the institutions and the people that really want to make this right. And that to me is the most encouraging part of all of this.
Right now, I want to turn it over to Gary to see if we have any questions from the social media world out there. Gary, how you doing today? And thanks for moderating this, although we can't see your face, but thanks for moderating.
Thanks, General. Jesse, nice to speak with you today. You mentioned the need for the region to carve out a better identity. In North Carolina, the Raleigh-Durham area has done a really good job branding itself as the Research Triangle. How do you feel Central Pennsylvania can develop a regional identity that helps attract job creators? And what do you feel the focus should be?
That's a great question, Gary. So this is a little bit of idealism and realism mixed together. And this is just my opinion. And I don't necessarily think that I would ever go into a career in marketing. So take this for what it's worth in terms of shaping or marketing an identity for South Central PA. What do we have going for us that won't change no matter what happens? Our location. We move a lot of goods and services through this region, transportation, distribution, logistics. Anyone who's driven up 81 or 83 knows that there are warehouses going in really on spec, you know, million square foot over here, 1.5 over here, and they're just being built and they're being sold pretty quickly. So I would argue that over the next 25 years, what won't change is that we will still be a logistics and distribution hub. However, when we think about crafting an identity, one could argue that the technology infused with logistics and transportation could be phenomenal. We think about automation, robotics. We think about AI being able to move these goods back and forth. It'll still come through South Central PA, but it may need a higher skill or a higher tech level to be able to do this. So do I think that South Central PA will be Silicon Valley 2.0? It would be great, but it's probably unlikely. However, we could be a high-tech distribution and logistics hub that not only takes advantage of our location, but also brings in people that are at that high level, high skill set, entrepreneurs, engineers, doing all this crazy tech stuff. I can barely get my computer to boot up, that they've got robots being able to move stuff back and forth. I think what would be interesting about that is then you combine what the Auditor General said before about this being a great place to live and to work and a very affordable place. And I think you have a really interesting combination for crafting South Central as we make stuff and we move stuff at really high tech levels. It's also a great place to raise a family too. So that would be, I look 15 years down the road and that might be a little idealism, but also it's not going to change who we are as a region.
Thank you for that response. The Department of Labor and Industry just released its list of high priority occupations. Tell me a bit about that list and how it fits into the Central Pennsylvania region's job needs.
Yeah, so the high priority occupation list is really at the nexus of so much about what we do. In partnership with Labor and Industry and their Center for Workforce Information and Analysis, they pull together a lot of the macro level and regional data about what the occupations are that are most in demand. And they're the statisticians and economists who crunch all those numbers in a great way to look at wage rates, projected growth, but also what I think is really important is occupations that will steer people on a career pathway. So think not dead-end jobs. So even if the wage rate for an entry-level job on this high priority occupations list isn't the highest wage rate, what it could do is it leads to 5 or 6 other different levels of a career pathway that do pay really good, solid living wages. And so for us, the high priority occupation list really dictates a lot of the occupations that we invest in. So if we look on there and we see, for instance, a CNC machinist, we go to an advanced manufacturing company, we find out that they need a CNC machinist. Because that occupation is on that HPO list, that high priority occupation list, that to us means that the data is behind it, that this is a really important and good occupation for us to invest in. So in terms of our grant dollars that we use, we're really gearing everything towards that HPO list to target our investments as best as possible. Clearly, there are probably 6 or so occupations that end up being the most popular that are on that list, both because the jobs are out there and people want those jobs. So that's really kind of how we use that HPO list.
Thanks, Jesse. Last question from me. Let's talk to the worker who may be out there afraid that their job's never coming back. They know they have to make a change, but they're afraid they don't have the education or skills. What should that person do?
Well, I think the simple answer would be go on to pacareerlink.pa.gov and find that individual's local PA Career Link and give them a call, whether they're in our region or elsewhere across the Commonwealth. And in doing so, they're going to be able to talk to a person who will help to either give them information, steer them in the right direction, or invite them to have sort of a virtual one-on-one career assessment. And what we can do for that individual is really just talk through, what are you looking for? What are your skill sets? What options do you have? And truly, it is about empowering them with resources and information. I think that's probably the best thing, because for someone who is worried that their job is not coming back, this is a really unique and challenging time for so many people. And we want to do our part in whatever way we can to help the job seekers of Pennsylvania. So that would be my suggestion, pacareerlink.pa.gov, and find their local job center and give us a call.
Thanks, Jesse. General, I'll hand it back to you.
Great, Jesse. Thank you so much for your time and your insight on this. If you could, again, repeat some phone numbers, emails, website, just so everyone can have that as they move forward. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously, South Central PA Works, scpaworks.org is our organization's website, of which you can get all the information locally about the PA Career Link job centers. But pacareerlink.pa.gov is probably the best website to go to. And honestly, you create a profile, you can start applying for jobs within 10 minutes. One other plug for PA Career Link is the technology that the state has built into that website is, I think they call it job spidering, which is a really cool name. I'm not exactly sure what these spiders in the computer do, but they go and pull jobs off of all of these other job boards. So when you go to PA Career Link, you are searching all of the common job boards that you may otherwise use. So it really is a powerful tool. On that website too, you have phone numbers for each PA Career Link. And for those that are open, they're probably open by appointment only. Here in South Central Pennsylvania, we are open for those conversations remotely and virtually.
Yeah.
You call us and there's a human being on the other end of the line to help you out. So
great. That's awesome. Jesse, thank you so much for your time, and everyone out there for tuning in. Thank you. And so we'll repost this on our Facebook and other social media platforms as well for people that want to chime in. And I'm sure your team is available if anyone has follow-up discussions they want to have. So everyone out there, again, thank you for tuning in. And just a reminder, hey, stay safe, stay smart. We are all in this together. Hopefully, if you are in transition employment-wise, this discussion helped you. Or certainly if you're a business looking to hire someone, hopefully this discussion helped you as well. Thank you very much, everyone. Have a great rest of your day. Take care. Bye-bye.
Once again, thanks to Auditor General Eugene DePasquale for doing the interviews that you've been hearing here on Special Edition. You can find more of his interviews on his Facebook page as well as his website. They are interviews that are important to everyone around the Commonwealth. Now, don't go away. Congressman Dan Muser recovering from COVID-19 next on Special Edition. Welcome back to Special Edition. I'm Paula Degnan. Congressman Dan Muser diagnosed with COVID-19. Intercom's Jason Barsky spoke with the congressman to find out how he's doing.
Says he's doing okay. I just want to check in. Dan Muser, good morning. Congressman Dan Muser, how are you, sir?
Good, Jason. Hey, thanks. You know, it's a heck of a conversation on the roller coaster out of Chernobyl. and I know I'm a far cry from Justin Bieber, but I'll do my best as long as I don't sing.
No, you're
how are
good.
You?
Yeah, very good. How about you?
Hey, I really appreciated your email, by the way, reaching out even today. And so many good friends and all reached out. Sent their prayers and wished for a speedy recovery, which I'm having.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. You know, number one, I mean, you tested positive for COVID-19 over the weekend or Friday?
I got my results back Thursday morning.
Okay.
So I was tested Wednesday.
So I'm guessing you were not with the president here. I was out of the area. I didn't even see the president's appearance in Old Forge. You were not here, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I did not attend. I was intended to. I was planning on it, and I got the test result back, so certainly I wasn't not going to go after hearing that. And, you know, it was kind of interesting, this thing. I began feeling some symptoms, and I wouldn't have gone, if they didn't test us prior. I would have gotten tested, and even before getting tested, I wouldn't have gone to the president, because I was feeling a little ill, a little different. Not it was mild, but a little cough, you know, some of the symptoms that they say that you have, a little tightness in the chest, and it just didn't feel right. So, but I got tested, and I found out that morning, and in fact, they told me I was positive.
What's your reaction to something like that? Because it's like, you know, for me, it's like I haven't been tested. I haven't felt any symptoms, and I'm hoping I can get past this without ever being tested. That's yeah. just, how did you feel? Did you feel like you...
How did I feel with the symptoms?
The symptoms, you kind of explain that. It? Yeah, when you hear that news, what does that feel like?
Not good. It was, again, it wasn't a big surprise because I was, I felt like I was having minor symptoms, but I even said to my wife, you know, just because I have a little sore throat doesn't mean you have COVID. You know, there's other sicknesses out there. But still, in this day and age, I strongly recommend if you start feeling any of those symptoms that we read about and are customary, I think people should do their best to isolate and get tested, which is what I did. And sure enough, I was positive.
Do you look back, and there's no way to know for sure, but do you look back and go, oh, I'll bet it was when I went to blank? Do you have any sort of recollection as to how or where it happened?
Yeah, you can't help but doing that, trying to trace it. And of course, I contacted, I think I traced it back to about Monday. And so I called over the weekend. I must have had 89,000 phone calls, but I called immediately all the people that I was with. I had a couple of manufacturing tours. I called everyone that I was within 5-6 feet of, and for the most part, you know, we were wearing masks, we were social distancing, we were doing everything right, and even those that I called felt that way. So it wasn't, I don't believe it was transmitted from me to anyone, so that's a good thing.
That's good. So you're saying you were wearing a mask for the most part?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. At every event I was at, we were wearing masks.
All right. Because someone sent me this, and it's so crazy because I don't know what's real and what's not. Someone said, there's pictures on your website of you wearing masks without the nose covered. And I said, it's possible. It can happen. Now, it can happen. It can happen. My theory on that is it's not defiance if it happens. If you do it all the time, it seems weird, but that's not what you're saying happened here. It just seems...
Yeah, no, it didn't. Look, I had different masks are heavy. Look, if you're 6 feet away from someone, you pull your mask down for a second to get a breath of air in the heat. I did everything I could to be, and I will continue even after this, to be socially conscious of what are the right things to do. But let's face it, if you are outdoors and you're 6 feet away... Mm-hmm. You know, your masks in those cases are not necessary. They're not recommended. But, right. You know, safe but sorry. But on the same note, you know, that's the reality of it.
Gotcha. Your symptoms, you had them. Are they subsiding? Are they getting more intense? Have you been back to the doctor?
No, subsided. It's really terrific. Yesterday I felt better than the day before, and today I feel very good. So I'm able to work and take care of some business, and you know it's no fun. And I'm quarantined, but as I mentioned, fortunately my family was not in contact with me during this duration, and my wife, thankfully, tested negative. So all that's good. And I, you know, contacted a doctor, and that was pretty interesting, too. This whole thing's a bit of a learning experience. And my doctor, not to mention any names, but strongly recommended hydroxychloroquine. Lots of reasons for that. But what happened was I got on a Z-Pack immediately, even Wednesday, Thursday. So he said, since I did that and it was 3 days in, just stay on the Z-Pack as opposed to going to hydroxychloroquine. But I've got other things. I've got this quercetin, and I've got vitamin D supplements, mm-hmm. and zinc, they say, is very good. And all I know is I'm feeling stronger every day minimizing the symptoms every day. So it's working out.
Talking to Congressman Dan Muser, he tested positive for COVID-19. It's just interesting to hear these stories. The Z-Pack, though, it's for bacterial infection, correct?
Yeah, but this thing, you know, it goes after, you know, it's a virus, of course, but, you know, it creates infection in your lungs.
So it's like kind of blocking that from starting, I'm guessing?
Yeah, and there's also this quercetin, by the way, anybody looks it up, which really also helps with lung maintaining your infiltration of your lungs, I understand. I read up on it. So, you know, I just got a few a few remedies here, therapeutics that came highly recommended from a physician, and they seem to be working out.
Yeah. You know, you sent me a video. If you want, we can save it for next time. We have plenty of time to talk about the election. I will say this. I told my wife, because she was at, that was the first part of that conversation when I started talking to you today. She said, "Who's that?" I told her, and she was a little impressed. He's in D.C. And I said, "Yeah, he's a national congressman in D.C. And I described you this way, and I said, we don't agree on a lot of stuff politically, but we have good conversations. And plus, I personally passed things to your office, Dan. I want to compliment you here. I said, I've passed things to you, Dan, and you've gotten certain things accomplished either for listeners or just helping people out. Things that I usually tend to only see when people are straight up campaigning. when you're not campaigning. So I appreciate the fact that you do that. So it's nice to know that they can, we can disagree on whatever, but it's nice. I've seen you do that stuff that I usually only see from people when they're on the campaign trail. So,
Hey, that's my job. I do take it. I'm very dedicated to it. And I don't want to let people down.
Well, look, get back to your quarantining. Unless this is the highlight, this is probably the highlight of your day. You're going to sit in a room doing nothing all day, right? You have any good
morning. I'm staying in the mix here. I just got off the phone with the Trump convention team, but on the same note, it is important to bring it down a notch, get better. Which I think I am.
Nice.
And again, I just recommend to people, you feeling the symptoms, do the right things, go get it checked out, isolate some. Hopefully it's nothing, but if it is, then you're not transmitting it. But again, I really thank that so many people sending their prayers and their best wishes. So we got a great community, and you're part of it, Jason.
Well, thank you. Dan, hope you feel better. Hopefully the symptoms continue to go, and you don't have any weird setbacks. And
I'm good. And it shouldn't give us. We really got to lean forward. We got to be smart. The world's not risk free, but we've got to lean forward and be smart and be safe and get back to business in a safe manner. And also, it's great to see how many school districts are being so strategic and again smart on their opening plans, whether it's hybrid or full. So it's really interesting to see so many of the schools throughout my district and throughout Luzerne County. So we gotta be safe, but we've got to keep moving forward.
Yeah, well, I agree, and as long as we do it safe, and that's the hard thing, getting everyone to agree what is safe and what isn't, and I guess that'll be the ongoing argument for the next 6 months to a year to 2 years, we'll see, looking back. But feel better. Thank you for taking the time to call in and get some rest. Congressman Dan Muser.
And a continued speedy recovery to Congressman Dan Muser. Now don't go away. When Special Edition returns, Intercom's Nancy Kamen is going to be talking with Dr. David Palmiter about stress and anxiety. Welcome back to Special Edition. And before we hear from Intercom's Nancy Kamen talking with Dr. David Palmiter, we have something we'd like to share with you. A car show to benefit Tracy's Hope Animals will be held Saturday, September 5th from noon until 4 at Scranton McDade Park Pavilion No. 2. They'll have entertainment, a 50-50, and all kinds of fun, but you are reminded, masks must be worn at all times throughout the event. Again, that's to benefit Tracy's Hope Hospice Care and Rescue for Domestic Animals, Saturday, September 5th, starting at noon at Scranton McDade Park. Now, Intercom's Nancy Kamen and Dr. David Palmiter talking about stress and anxiety.
It would be a good time to check in with Dr. David Palmiter. He's a psychologist. He's a professor. And Dr. David Palmiter, also, you can find more information at helpingfamilies.com. Dr. Palmiter, always good to have you with us.
Yeah, me too, Nancy. Thanks for having me on again.
Now, you had sent me some numbers yesterday that you got from, I believe it was the census, where they talked to people. I was also talking about the CDC numbers that are out, where 40% of Americans are struggling with mental health issues. So this is something that is not just a small percentage of people. There's a real struggle going on right now with all this happening.
Yeah, the Census Bureau sample size is over 225 million Americans, so it's pretty authoritative. And they find in the most recent edition, which was concluded July 21st, that 25% of people report feeling depressed at least half the time. And over half, 57%, report feeling depressed several days a week or more. With anxiety, 69% report feeling that significantly several days a week, and over a third, more than half the time. And those numbers are even higher for the groups of young people, like 18 to 29. So yes, it's now become normative to have significant experiences of depression and anxiety.
Yeah, so when we talk about young people, and we're seeing some of them being able to go back to school, or, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty in the air about that. Let's just talk about them, first of all, the younger people. What is it that they're dealing with? Is it the disruption of the normal routine, lack of social interaction?
Well, the thing about this pandemic that strikes at the heart is that more than anything else, we humans need social connection. I mean, that's the best predictor of medical health late in life, is the quality of social connection at age 50. More than any medical, traditional medical measurement, our quality of social connection best predicts our health and longevity and so many other mental health variables. So this pandemic cuts at the core of that. And for all of us across the spectrum of age, have to deal with more social disconnection, even when we're clever and creative about trying to do it in a way that's respectful of social distancing. I think for younger people then too, or at least the social thing is what they tell me by far. And then the other thing is just, you know, some of the things you inferred, the wanting to get back to the rituals that they know and are comfortable with, and a life that feels more balanced than the one where they're home all the time.
Right. Now, a lot of times when something happens and people have anxiety, stress, or start to feel some depression, there's like a trigger, you know, event. It could be a loss of a spouse. It could be, you know, someone's illness. It could be a loss of a job. In some cases here, though, we're talking about a number of things that people are dealing with. They may feel uncertainty in their job. They may feel, you know, now they have to worry about their kids if they're not going to be in school and they're going to be helping to, you know, take care of them at home. I mean, we're talking about more than just one kind of stressor on a number of people.
You know, Nancy, your comment cuts at a core issue. In our country, we conflate adaptive pain with neurotic pain. So neurotic pain would be, if I imagine that nobody likes me, for instance, and I'm depressed. But this is adaptive pain. I mean, we all need to be doing some grieving. And if we're all out there, okay, I'm feeling grief, so let me just go and exercise more, or let me just go and eat more, and those things are good activities. But if I don't take the time to tune into my grieving, my loss, it's like painting over rust.
So how would they do that? How do you do that? How do you take time with it?
What I do is I'm a client schedule time. I do it myself also. and try to pull to mind what my losses are, what my feelings are, and to be empathic with myself about it.
So you're saying you actually face, you know, what it is, because I see so many people online, and I do it myself, where we immerse ourselves in some other task, whether it's, you know, remodeling something at the house or, like you said, taking extra long walks. You're saying all that's fine, but that you still need to get to the core of what you're dealing with.
Now, if I'm dealing with depression or anxiety and those feelings come up, those should be eviscerated quickly. And that's what, when we do cognitive behavioral therapy, that's what we do. But authentic experiences of grief can't be buried alive, or they turn into zombies, zombified feelings, and they end up attacking us just like zombies in surprising and destructive ways. So we have to lean into the grief that we're feeling, create time for self-compassionate grieving.
Let's talk about the kids, because as you're saying, a lot of them, and when I say kids, I don't just mean, you know, up to the age of 18. You're talking about, you know, your children that may be in college and such. How is it as a family dynamic? How can the family work together? Because I'm sure what they see their parents do can also affect how they handle this.
Right. I think being able to do this self-compassionate grieving can be done in families, to be open to talking to each other about our pain. We parents, we're crazy people. Our love makes us crazy regarding our kids. And sometimes when our kids start to talk about suffering, we want a quick jump in with a fix. or quick jump in with the reassurance. And if you've ever been on the receiving end of that, where you're grieving something and somebody does that, you just want to create distance. You just want to get out of that moment. So I think the starting point there also as families is to share with that, with each other, those things. Then there's so, once you've done that, there's so many creative ideas. I mean, I have several on my YouTube page and my blog, ideas of ways of then building up, of having experiences of meaning and joy after we've done that hard work of grieving.
I know that there have been a number of people I've talked to who say that, you know, it's been a struggle, it's been tough, but they have also been able to find a closer bond with either their spouse or with their kids because of the shared time together.
All pain is a dragon guarding treasure, right? Now, sometimes when the dragon's still doing its clawing, as COVID will continue to do until we have a vaccine, it's hard to be aware of what that treasure is. But other times we can start getting some glimmers, some sense for what treasures are there. And the treasure always equals and exceeds the suffering. So, for instance, some cultural glimpses we're seeing. Maybe we're becoming more attuned and responsive to racial inequities. Maybe we're becoming more attuned and responsive to mental health issues in our country, which has been a long, long standing area of deprivation and neglect.
Yeah. Now, what can we do? Because in the very beginning, I think there was, and I've seen studies that say that people were much more about reaching out to, you know, distant family, to friends, to neighbors. Because we're seeing these numbers, isn't it critical that we all, you know, reach out to loved ones and even just to our neighbors?
Social, as much as we can reestablish social connection, we're not going to equal safely the pre-COVID connection, but as long as being creative and seeing that as an important to-do task every week is critically important for us all. And there are lots of creative ways of maintaining some connection while also being medically safe. I've got 36 of them on my hecticparents.com blog, for instance, listed there.
Okay, so you have hecticparents.com, and then you also have helpingfamilies.com. I want to make sure I get the information out.
All right. The blog is Hectic Parents. The YouTube video is kidsandcouples.com. Links to the most things, but that's mostly for my private practice and university lives.
So what would you say now that we're going to be heading into, I think, you know, obviously with the summer ending and we're going to get into the winter and all that stuff. I'm just concerned that it gets, you know, we already get cabin fever, so to speak, you know, with those time of the year. Are you concerned about anything like that where you're going to be kind of stuck inside?
My clients relate to the metaphor of like walking around in maple syrup. And I think even, you know, as a university professor, my colleagues and I, my friends and I who are professors, we all talk about how, you know, we're going into the semester, we so much want to serve our students, we so much want to be there for them, and at the same time, we've never felt so tired, you know, going into a semester, because this has been such a siege. And I think that families are feeling the same thing. Today, in today's Washington Post, there's a national survey suggesting that working parents, 50% of them report that online schooling makes their job harder or impossible.
Yeah.
So we're all having a very challenging transition.
We have to, I think, in any situation like this, always have hope, right? There's hope that, you know, things seem rough, and especially when it's uncertain, you don't have an end date. But the reality is that as we get further along, perhaps it's treatments or vaccine or something, that we just got to hang in there because better days will be coming.
That is a deep psychological truth, Nancy. And one of the things I do with my clients is I have them list the 6 worst things that have happened to them in the past that they're over. And they give a pain rating for the past, a pain rating currently. And then I have them reflect, is there any way now that your life is better because of that pain? Not that you would do it again or not that you would choose to experience it, but are there any ways? And then they rate the value of the betterment. It's so, so common for people to end up reporting, you know what? I hated that suffering, but man, did it make my life better in these other ways.
Right, right. There may be go ahead.
are suffering as a dragon guarding treasure. So you're right, the treasure will be there at America 2.0. It's just taken a while to get there.
All right, and finally, just I know it's because so many people are experiencing it. It's not abnormal to feel, you know, down or feel, you know, a little anxiety here. How do you know, though, when it's something that you probably should talk to someone else about, like a professional?
When there's some important area of life that isn't getting accomplished, work, relationships, physical health, if one of those starts to, you know, I have a couple weeks now where I'm just not hitting the mark, I'm not sleeping, I can't get my job done, I'm chronically irritable with the people I love, that's time to seek out a therapist, many of whom offer virtual therapy, and especially cognitive behavioral therapy, a very important term, because that's the top evidence-based treatment for depression, anxiety, and stress.
All right, so Dr. David Palmiter, thanks for being with us. Let's just mention again, you have helpingfamilies.com. You also have videos and a blog. If you want to just let us know where people can go to get some more information and some helpful tips.
Yeah, the videos are kidsandcouples.com, YouTube videos about COVID coping, and then hecticparents.com is the blog.
Wonderful.
Thanks for listening to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories. A production of Intercom Communications.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.